Okay, so it turns out this is not a mini whiz. It's multiple mini whizzes. So, each time I recorded, I kind of went longer and longer. Like usual, just rambling on and on. So, yeah, I guess it's a full episode. And, yeah, it's one of those freaking crackpot episodes. So, potentially. I mean, it depends on how sensitive you are to trusting the science. Like, I get it. Oh, man, science. Science rules. It's science. So, yeah.
Okay, so this might be a mini whiz. I don't know how much noise you hear. Guys. Well, it's going to be three different topics, because now I want to talk about freaking one. I think the cars here are way louder. And my theory is why, man. What the heck? I just saw a police stop a black car. What, didn't catch someone doing a drug deal? Interesting. Wait, man, I'm still looking. But I want to see if that car just drove away and the police is chasing after him. No, I don't think so. He stopped. Sadly, you don't hear a police chase happen. Right when I start the podcast, that would have been freaking amazing. But anyway, I have three freaking topics. One, freaking Hong Kong, the cars are loud as a mess. And that's my theory. You know, and then they talk about like Shenzhen. I remember Frank was talking about with Shenzhen, like, oh yeah. The cars are so quiet because of the electric vehicles. Blah, 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 blah. But I was thinking to myself, like in America, I don't remember the cars being as loud as the cars here at all. And I live by a highway. So, like, you know, of course there are the occasional, like, super loud engine cars, the sports car, or the cars that people tuned, but, there's another police. Oh, they're out today. I don't know why. You might hear me get freaking arrested on podcasts. But still, I don't remember the cars being that loud, or at least the level of loud they are here. So my theory, actually, is that the cars, it's not that old. Shenzhen has electric vehicles. No, it's that Hong Kong cars in general are on average old as mess. Like literally the city has not progressed past like the 80s unironically with anything they do. So because of that, the cars are old. And you know, the old cars are loud. I don't think people realize that, how far like the automobile industry has progressed since like, you know, the heyday. Like, yeah, and people aren't buying cars every single other day, but most Americans kind of have a pretty newer type of car. Like, rather that be from, like, the early 2000s. Like, unless you're, like, in the country or something, you very rarely see someone with, like, a really, really old beater 1980s car. But here, seemingly, that's pretty common. The freaking minibuses are like that. The buses in general are old. The trucks are old. Many of the cars are old, so that's my theory, and it's not that the electric by Shenzhen are really quiet. It's freaking car age. We have barely newer cars, so quieter than here, even though we don't have electric vehicles. Okay, so topic number two. I was watching a podcast. Oh yeah, this is like days later, maybe a day later, I guess. I kind of don't remember when I made that podcast. But yeah, still with Mini Whiz. Second topic is about aliens. So I was listening to podcast, blah, 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 blah. But it had me thinking about UFO sightings. And I have a story where I thought I saw a UFO. So I was on the plane of going back to America for Christmas. So this was just a couple months ago. And I remember I was on the plane, I was looking out the window because it was nighttime. And when I was looking, I just saw that I saw a bright light and it just shot 90 degrees up. It just went up and it stopped. And I was like, what the heck? Whoa. I was like, is this no way I saw my first UFO? But you know, I'm a skeptical person. So I kept looking at it constantly. I was just looking at it because I was like, okay, if it moved once, it will have some type of movement again. And I will notice it. I don't care if it's a slight movement where it moves a centimeter. I will notice that. So I just kept looking at it. And then I realized, wait a minute, this is just a star. But then I was like, why did that star move, though? That was crazy. Why would a star move? And then I realized, oh, wait a minute, I'm on a freaking plane. The way planes turn, like, you know, the plane rolls, like where it leans to the right or to the left, like where you might be going a little bit parallel with the ground almost, like depending on how sharp of a turn it was. And when I was looking out the window, the plane was turning. But because you're in a plane and, you know, technically it's a pretty smooth turn, you don't really notice that your position just turned to the, you know, you're now looking up. Like, you know, you don't really notice that the plane turned. So to me, it looked like that star just shot straight up. But in reality, it was just that the plane rotated a little bit when it was turning. So then that made me think, like, how many of these UFO sightings are because of stuff like that? Because most UFO sightings are pilots. Because, you know, you argue, oh, pilots are going to see stuff that are in the air more often. But they're also going to confuse stuff that's in the air more often, even in space. Like, you know, where they're like, oh, Buzz Aldrin saw a UFO once. But again, stuff move differently when you're in the air or when you're in space, because especially in space, because you don't have any sense of what's up or what's down. Or you don't have any sense, like there's nothing in the background where you can really get a sense of scale, or where you can get a, even in the air too, you don't have anything that if you're high enough, you can't really get a sense of scale because there's just sky, or in space, there's just black darkness. So you see anything, it might move differently than you expect. And it ends up, oh, that was actually just a natural movement. It's just I didn't have a perspective that showed me that this movement was normal. Or, oh, that thing was actually very far away. Or, oh, it was actually very, very close. And that was a small object that was just moving. Like maybe it was a fly or something. Like a lot of these UFOs that have been debunked, sometimes they might be balloons, or it's just the pilot, it's flying up in the air, and, you know, a balloon hits a gust of wind. But from far away, he thinks it's a big aircraft. So he's like, well, how did it move like that? That shouldn't be possible. But it ended up, it's just a freaking balloon that's floating, that someone let go, and it's floating to the stratosphere. So that's my other mini whiz, is like, I wonder how, which is, a, you know, it's kind of disappointing, but it makes me wonder how many of these UFO sightings are actually UFO sightings where, you know, disappointingly, they're just benign, normal objects that seem to react differently or seem to move differently simply because you're in space or you're in the air and there's no really sense of up or down. Or like, let's just say there was one where an astronaut thought they saw a UFO and it ended up, those were just fishing lights. Like there were fishing boats below because, you know, the ISS is not actually that high up. Like they make it seem, one of my fears, I might make a podcast about that soon. But, you know, the ISS is not that far up. So when they look down at the like at the ground, you know, they're going to notice stuff like that. So it's like, you know, they saw fishing boats, but then they're like, what? How are these lights that are like, you know, parallel to each other? And they seem like they're moving away from us really quickly. Ended up, they're just on the dark side of the world. You know, they're on the nighttime side. And they're like in the middle of the Pacific, maybe, or something like that. And, or not even in the middle of the Pacific. Maybe they're just right off of the South China Sea or whatever, like off of the coast of Japan, somewhere like where there's a bunch of fishing boats. And, you know, to them, because it was just pitch black darkness, they're like, what are those lights? But then, of course, they realize those are just fishing boats. But again, just to make the point quick, it makes you wonder how many of these things are basically that. And now the third thing. Now this is, I think this should still be a mini whiz. I'm hoping, because mini whizzes should be less than 15 minutes no matter what. So maybe I'll do some editing. I don't know. But still, here is, if it's not, then I guess it's not a mini whiz. And now you know. But still, here is the last point. About aliens in general, alien discovery. So, you know, we're far away from everything. We're far away from galaxies. We're far away from other planets. We're far away from, you know, nebula. We're far away from everything. So we need very, very complex equipment to, you know, discover stuff in astronomy. We need very expensive equipment. So that's why, you know, there's all this funding that's needed for like NASA when they're not doing air stuff. There's all this funding that's needed for space. If they're not like launching satellites for other things or doing like military stuff, like that strictly research-centric stuff, that's expensive. So they have, that's why they have to prepare for years. You know, the James Webb telescope, you know, how many years they've been preparing for that. It didn't just to get the funding, just to get the equipment, just to get the building of it, blah, 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 blah. That took decades of preparation and blah, 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 blah. So astronomy is very, very, very reliant on government funding, because that's the only thing that can really, like, you know, pay for this crap. Because I guess you could have a rich CEO or something do it, but again, this stuff is expensive to even to maintain. Like, you know, that's millions and millions and billions of dollars on a yearly basis, you know, being spent. So, you know, they're reliant on the government. Which means that many discoveries in astronomy cannot be done without this equipment that is, you know, funded by the government. So, like, everything you see, every astronomical, I guess that's the word, astronomical discovery is basically using the same equipment. Oh, we're using the Hubble telescope. They rent it out. They literally rent it out. They pick up time spaces. And sometimes those time slots are very, very, like, far in between. Like, they might pick a time slot that's months ahead of time, maybe years ahead of time, because all astronomers in the world are using these same telescopes. Like, yeah, you could use a telescope down on Earth, but the problem is that, you know, there's atmospheric, I forgot what his word is, like atmospheric dilution or dilating or lensing or something. Basically, you know, the atmosphere messes up the light that you're receiving. So it's hard to really, really get an accurate result without leaving the atmosphere. So that's why they have, you know, Hubble telescope or James Webb telescopes millions of miles out in, you know, out in space. Well, not millions, but you know what I mean. Like, they're out of the atmosphere so they can get the cleanest kind of picture possible. And even then, there's still problems. So maybe, like, the next telescope, you're like, oh, we're going to have it orbit the moon. So then, you know, there's really, really no atmospheric lensing or whatever the bullcrap's called. But still, all the scientists are using these same telescopes. They're all using James Webb. They're all using Hubble. They're all using, well, I guess those are the two main ones, because those are like the two big, big ones. So if you're really, really doing some big discoveries, you're using those telescopes. So all your readings are based off of what that equipment gives you. So why did I bring that all up? Why I bring it all up? So I'm talking about freaking alien life. So let's just say, like, all the conspiracies are true. We already know that they're aliens that are keeping it hidden from the public. Some people would be like, what? But if they're hidden from the public, there would be at least one scientist or one astronomer who would, you know, discover this stuff. Like, they, you know, you can't hide it from everyone. But I'm saying you can easily, actually. Because again, even if, let's say you are the most uncorruptible scientist in the world, but we're all, who are astronomers, relying on these same pieces of equipment. So they're relying on the same data that is being sent back. So let's just say, you know, they're looking for life forms based off of the nitrogen coming off from certain planets or whatever. So they point it, they say, hey, we're going to rent out the Hubble telescope and point it at this nebula and hope that we could find a bunch of nitrogen or a bunch of oxygen or something, like something that shows that the atmosphere has an ecosystem. Well, they're getting readings from a third party, technically. It's not first party readings. You can never know for sure. Well, I mean, you can kind of know for sure, but you can't really know for sure, rather than readings are just wrong, because again, you're using these readings on this equipment, where the only way for you to get those readings is from that equipment. Like, it's not like you can double check. You can only know that those readings are accurate by having another type of equipment that's similar to that one. So, like, you know, it's kind of impossible to, like, like, if someone were tampering, it's kind of impossible to know, you know? Or let's just say there are certain parts of the universe or something. Let's just say we know that the gray aliens are from this part, you know, this galaxy. Let's just say the Andromeda Galaxy part 2 or part 17BA. You know, at that particular section, it's impossible for you to even cope that there aren't aliens there, because it's just so obvious from the readings you get. you know, you see the light levels or whatever, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, there's freaking nitrogen, there's oxygen. Dang, we even see a superstructure here. Like, you could tell from the freaking, the way that the planet is blocking its sun, that, oh, this is a big superstructure. Oh, they're aliens exist. You could easily, let's say when you're built, because remember, the higher up you go, the more likely they are to listen. So let's just say, while they're building the Hubble telescope, or let's say while they're building the James Webb, they're like, hey, just hard code in, if they point in this part, just don't show anything. Or, you know, just, yeah, don't show anything. Just be like, oh, I guess that's a kind of empty spot. Or, you know, let's copy and paste some random spot over here where there's this low percent of a chance that they would know, like, realize the exact copy and just put it there. If you really wanted to do that, you have 10 years to prepare. You can easily do it. Easily. And say a scientist, if they just happen to look at that spot, they'd be like, oh, there's, you know, it's just a normal planet. We're seeing these light levels. Oh, there seems to be a little bit of hydrogen, maybe a little bit of diamond. Oh, it's a diamond planet. Yeah, there's no life here. That's impossible for there to be life. And they move on to something else. Or let's say there are certain readings where they say, hey, if the oxygen levels or something were make it obvious that this is an ecosystem type of atmosphere or whatever, like, you know, it's an active atmosphere, just make it through a threshold. If it gets above this, just drop it down back down to the threshold, so they never know that there is a planet that is, you know, like, where it's super high levels of nitrogen or oxygen or whatever. It will always be below the certain threshold that scientists say is needed for life or something. You could easily tap and not know, because again, let me repeat myself. The only way for you to either see these planets or see that far into the galaxy is for you to use that, to have that technology. You can't have that technology because it's expensive. It's expensive to build and expensive to launch. And then you can, even if, you know, you get these readings, there's no way to double check, because these are readings from the only bit of technology that can't even receive these readings. So, you know, there's no way to really know for sure. So, moral of the story is, there could be, you know, the universe could be teeming with life, and you could easily hide it if you really wanted to, for whatever reason. You could easily hide it. So now that I gave you the secrets, I'm hoping that they're like, hey, maybe Jar's first word. Oh, we're gonna let him in on the secrets. And then, you know, I know. And then when you see here, I never talk about stuff ever again, you know what happened. Oh. Nothing happens to, like, oh, Jar knows too much, so we're just not going to even mention him, because he knows too much and people might believe him now. So I guess the only thing you could do is just make this podcast as popular as possible and spread it to everything so you ever know. I think the benefits of this is that more people will have that on their mind. Scientists will know that on their mind, and then they will double check their readings, maybe. Maybe they'll be like, oh, there is a chance that we have faulty readings. But for each of you, we discover a new way to double check our readings. And then when they double check, then they see there's life, and then they're like, wait a minute, it was all Jabari. And then you name instead of calling us humans, you call yourself Jabarians. It'd be pretty cool, pretty cool. What I'm saying, that's it. That's about it. I guess. Well, actually, no, I'm not done. Maybe this won't be a mini wave, because I think that other podcast I was going to talk about, I think it's kind of related to this one, and I don't think there's enough to talk about for it to be a full-blown podcast. So the thing I was going to talk about was just that, I think NASA is doing a disservice warping its images constantly. And you'd be like, oh, what do you mean? What do you mean? I'm talking about, like, the freaking ISS type pictures of Earth, because, like, in the International Space Station, they are not that high up. They really are. I think I talked about this in another podcast before. They're not that high up, as high as you would think. They're just high enough where they're not hitting enough of the atmosphere that they can get into orbit. but they're not high enough where they can see a full view of the whole entire Earth. You got to be far to see that, super far. But, you know, when they take pictures on the International Space Station, they're like, oh, but we want to make it, you know, because I guess they think people are stupid. They're like, oh, they're not going to think we're in space if we're, you know, if the Earth's not curved or something. So because they're not that high up, when they take pictures, it still looks like, you know, basically that you're in a big, you're in a plane, but higher, way higher. Well, not way, way higher, but fairly higher. So, you know, they can't see the whole Earth. Like, say if they're over Florida, they might see, I don't know, they might see up to Georgia. Max. There's no way they're seeing more than that, because they have to be super, super far. They're definitely not seeing the entire U.S. So, because of that, like, they gotta warp the images or make these, like, you know, to make it seem like, oh, they're really, really high. They gotta do the lens, that's why no matter what, every, photo or video from the ISS is always with the lens of fisheye lens. It's because they gotta, you know, give the appearance that there's a curve. And I'm not saying that I'm all flat earth type of thing, but it does make it, it makes it a little weird that they do that all the time. Like, I get it, it's an artistic type of thing, but, you know, this is for, you know, it gives a bad taste in people's mouth, I think, once they learn the truth that, you know, most of the pictures are doctored. Because even pictures of Earth, you know, they color correct these pictures because Earth does not look as you would expect. You know, it's probably a bunch of beige. It's not like beige. I mean, maybe the ocean still looks super, super blue. I'm talking about the actual land. It doesn't look as green or pretty as you would expect. And they do the same thing with, like, galaxies and stuff. I think that's the thing that people don't really know about. But, like, when they take a picture of a galaxy or take a picture of anything, you know, they're not seeing this stuff in visible light. You know, the visible light spectrum, it's hard for it to reach that far because it's not, it's high, it's fairly medium energy or whatever, so it's going to disperse by the time it reaches how many light years away. We're not going to see the freaking, like, you know, the colors of the galaxy. Most of the pictures we see, they're in the infrared spectrum. So because they're in the infrared spectrum, oh, we can't see it. So they take that infrared data and then they color it based off of, like, the energy levels. Like, let's just say, let's make it simple. You know the energy level from 0 to 1 in infrared. So you're saying, okay, from 0 to 2.5, we're going to say that's red, orange, yellow. From 2.5 to 7.5, we're going to say green. I don't know how the colors of RGB, whatever it is. And then we're going to say that when it gets to 1, we're going to make that blue or whatever. You know what I mean. Like, they pick these thresholds to change the colors. And, I mean, it still looks pretty, but it's misleading. That's not actually how the galaxies look, because these are in colors that, you know, we can't see. Like, if you fly to these parts of the galaxy, you're not seeing what you saw, you know, the NASA pictures. So there's a bunch of stuff like that, you know, that I think is a little misleading. It's a little messed up, actually, because, I mean, they're not lying, but they're not telling the full truth either. And I think these type of things are why there's, like, you know, the flat earthers or the people who don't trust the scientists, because scientists all the time, I mean, I notice it too, even with my research. I mean, I'm not doing research, but, you know, for my job, scientists or researchers always fudge the numbers, you know, because they want results, they want something to impress, so they fudge the numbers. They don't tell the whole truth. Like, let's even say, you know, let's say, you know, your model doesn't work, you know, it's not working fully yet, you have a feeling it might work in the future, but you know it doesn't work now. So you still run it, you run through the data, and you only put in the PowerPoint the parts that kind of show what you're talking about. So let's just say you're like, okay, I'm going to predict when my friend wakes up, and, you know, it's going to be like, you know, an app. So you can predict when you're going to wake up every night. And let's say you're trying to get investors. Well, you know, it doesn't work half the time. Well, in the PowerPoint, I'm only going to show the times where it predicted that the friend was waking up exactly when it said within a certain boundary, let's say within an hour. That's what I'm going to count as a success. But I'm not going to tell them, hey, this data was actually, you know, not only was I not predicting when they were awake 50% of the time, but those 50% of the time that I was, quote, predicting that they were awake, it was like sometimes an hour off. But I was considering that a success because, you know, it's kind of close. So, like, that's the type of stuff, like, where it's like they're not telling the full truth a lot of the time. But I guess that's just how things are because people want results. People want to see, you know, what you found. So even say the galaxy type thing where it's like, oh, you know, we discovered this galaxy and it's full of diamonds, actually. Wow, so cool. And look, this is what the galaxy looks like. And you're like, wow, look at all these colors. Space is beautiful. We really need to fund NASA more. Because, you know, they're showing you the parts that, like, you know, they can kind of fudge numbers for it. And not saying I'm anti-NASA or anything, but it's just, you know, it's a little misleading sometimes. And especially the whole height of the International Space Station, where it's really not as high as you would think. And it's misleading when they do these stupid fisheye lens. So that's why people... And I talked about this in another podcast recently, I think a year ago or something, where I was talking about, like, you know, why flat earthers, this, where it's like, you know, I don't know where we learned this, but everyone kind of learned this where it's like, oh, you can see the curve if you're, you know, at this height or something. You can actually see the curve of Earth. Or, oh, the horizon, you know, this. But then, you know, planes exist where you're higher than Everest. And you're like, huh, I still don't see a curve. Like, when I look through the horizon, it's not like I see an exaggerated curve. And it's because you're not high enough to see it. You have to be super, super, super high to actually see the curve of the entire Earth. Because you don't really think about how huge Earth is. Earth is huge. But yeah. It's super, super, super weird type stuff. So that's why I keep an eye open. Like, I forgot who is the podcast of the... I mean, it was some interview. The guy who did the Inner Cosmos podcast or whatever it's called. And he said something I thought was very, very wise, actually. Where he was like, you know, people kind of always jump on these people who are like, you know, the flat earthers or the people who's... What's another, like, what people consider stupid conspiracy, like the say the moon landing stuff where you're like, oh, people didn't land on the moon, da 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 da. You kind of need those people because science is not about, you know, being right. Ironically, science is more about being skeptical. So, you know, these people who are skeptical, you know, it's a good thing you're skeptical of certain things because that's how science progresses. You can't just be like, yup, everything's right, we trust the scientists. You need people, some people to be like, huh, that doesn't sound right. Because just a couple years ago, there was stuff that people truly believed in. They truly thought was correct. And then it ends up that's wrong. Like, new evidence shows up and it ends up wrong. So you kind of need these type of people who, you know, are always skeptical. It's kind of like an economy. You have the people who discover, the people who are not sure of the discovery. Because the people who are not sure, you know, they inspire people to look further into it. And then it could be that they're like, okay, I'm even more in agreement with with what was found out. Because now we know for sure, like, you know, we did all this backup study. And it turns out that this is actually correct. Or it ends up you discover a new thing. Where it's like, oh man, we were completely wrong about this. It actually works this way. So, yeah, I think the skeptics are good. Like, you know, they're annoying. They're kind of crazy sometimes. But I think they're a good thing. And is there anything else about... is there anything else? Anything else? I mean, I guess to say with the skeptic thing, there are a lot of things in science where you know, you rely on past discoveries, and you kind of just assume that they are right. Like, there might be a paper that's published 70 years ago where they discovered this thing. It happens a lot, and I think in the medical industry, where like someone did this type of medical experiment, and now that experiment or that study is how they base off their new studies, where it ends up, you know, that stuff that are completely wrong, people still base their knowledge off of, or base their new studies off of. An obvious example is like, say, oh, Black people don't feel pain, or don't feel pain as much as an average white person. Whereas like, now that we're not as freaking racist, we're like, that's such a stupid freaking idea. I definitely feel pain. When you say, I definitely feel pain. But then, you know, there are times where they were basing their whole anesthesia, like, you know, or even still now, where they don't give as much anesthesia to Black people, like when they're doing like certain surgeries or whatever, because of this study. And there are other studies that are like that, and there are other studies that are not even known that are probably like that, where it's like, this is just dead wrong. But we've based so much of our knowledge off of this study that, you know, the only way that someone is going to know that it's wrong is if, again, a skeptic who might sound stupid at the time fully studies it. So I say good for the skeptics, but, you know, at least try to prove. I mean, they are doing it sometimes, but, you know, maybe try to prove it in a more believable way, not just YouTube videos or like floating a balloon up and being like, oh, look, the earth's flat. No, you got to do a more thorough type of way of proving that the world's flat. But if you did, you know, there will be people who believe you, even some scientists who will be like, huh, wait a minute, this guy might be right. They'll do their experiment themselves. That's why that's why with papers, usually they're supposed to be things that are, what do you call it? I don't know what the word is. Like, you're supposed to be able to repeat the experiment. So sometimes, like, an obvious example is like when people say they discovered like a perpetual motion machine. Like, yeah, we did this perpetual motion machine. Look at this. Or like, and then, you know, you try it out yourself and you're like, huh, this doesn't work for me. Why doesn't it work for me? I mean, it worked for you. Or say with medical experiments, or I think it's medical. It's something where it happens all the time, where they're like, oh, look, I discovered this one thing. And then you try it and you're like, huh, why does that not work for me though? Why does it only work for you? Where, you know, it's a simple way of proving that something is wrong, I guess. But same way, you know, let's just say someone discovered the world's flat. Obviously, a lot of people would go and try to do it themselves to see, do those results still work? And let's say they did. If they did, I bet you it would all come into fruition. So, you know, skeptics of the world, the flat earthers, you know, I support you in your cause, but try to actually show, you know, proof that is believable. And then when you have proof that's believable, then other people will try it out. And then if they try it out and it turns out it's right, everyone's going to be like, huh, turns out we were just wrong for the past how many centuries? Oh, the earth's actually flat. That's kind of crazy. And then the government's be like, crap, they know. What do we do now? You're like, I don't know, we didn't expect this. Oh, crap. And then, you know, then they take off the mask and it turns out they're freaking alien monsters, and they're like, oh, crap. And then the Simpsons thing happens, where they're like, you can't do anything. It's a two-party system. Blah, 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 blah. But yeah, I'm not sure if this is many ways or not, but yeah, that's in the podcast. Nothing else to say.